Hello and welcome back to the Racing Riot podcast. I'm joined by my co-host Charlie Post, and today's show joined by Gavin Cromwell, who enjoyed a Royal Ascot winner yesterday. One runner at Royal Ascot, one winner, 100% strike record. I'm sure many trainers would take that. It's a brilliant week. It's a week that we all look forward to on the flat. Have you been covering it? I know you did it for Racing Post Live on Tuesday.
Yeah, I did the Betfair sponsored Racing Post Live on Tuesday. Really exciting day's racing. I mean, it kicked off the best possible fashion, nearly the world's best horse, Palace Pier, putting in an authoritative display in the Queen Anne. And then to me, I actually really felt the flat season ignite with Poetic Flair blowing them away in the St. James Palace. We needed, I mean, you got St. Mark's Basilica a little bit, but we needed a three-year-old, one of the classic generation, really to show and to show himself above the others. And I think seeing the Guineas winner, who's been campaigned so aggressively by Jim Bolger, a narrow miss in the Irish Guineas, and then pitching up there in the St. James Palace, people really, to me, not giving him the credit that he deserves already, showing just how good he is back on a quick surface. And he was destructive, wasn't he?
He is, yeah. He's extremely hardy as well. I think they're going to go to the Sussex Stakes next, potentially against Palace Pier.
And maybe St. Mark's Basilica, possibly. Yeah. Who knows? You know, I mean, what a showdown that would be.
Definitely. That would be very exciting. Yeah, great racing at Royal Ascot. We're recording this on a Thursday, so we've had 2 days of racing so far.
Love as well yesterday. How good was Love? So tough.
You get the impression that she's not fully wound up, and that's what's most exciting. Yeah. She's going to just keep on improving. And to win a Prince of Wales Stakes, not fully wound up,
I think she's just incredibly admirable. And again, you were getting that the vibes weren't that strong about her going into yesterday. And granted, Lord North was a late non-runner, but, you know, she still beat a Breeders' Cup winner. And, like, it's just the way she went about it, you know, like...
Does Ryan she win the Arc?
Oh, she's a major player with that filly's allowance, isn't she? And then we get into that whole thing again about whether it's justified at that level. But it's been shown that with Enable and Zarkava and Trev, that it is a race that fillies can do incredibly well in, and I don't see why Love can't continue that trend.
A fast and furious start to the podcast. Good for this week with the racing at Royal Ascot. Our big guest on the show is Gavin Cromwell, as mentioned at the start. He enjoyed Royal Ascot winner in the Queen Mary yesterday with a two-year-old Quick Susie. I'm delighted to be joined by Gavin Cromwell. Gavin, how are you doing, and how has it been 24 hours on from winning at Royal Ascot?
Yeah, it's surreal, really, to be honest. Yeah, it's such an occasion, and I was just delighted to have a horse worthy to come to Royal Ascot, and to go and win was, you know, that it's just unbelievable, really.
Quick Susie going into the Queen Mary, were there more nerves than sort of one of the big national hunt festivals, because you'd have plenty of runners there in comparison to what you have had at the big flat meetings?
Look, it's very similar, really. You know, at those big occasions, you know, they are nervous times and exciting times. But I suppose if you don't get nervous and excited about those days, you know, it's probably an important thing to get nervous and excited about them.
Just wondering, Gavin, I mean, again, for me, I haven't experienced that. How was it having 12,000 people back at the races?
Yeah, look, Ascot is such a big place now. 12,000 didn't seem like much of a crowd, but at the same time, there was a great atmosphere. And the fact that it was for a fully tested event, we didn't have to wear face masks in the majority of the areas, which was great. You know, and there certainly was a buzz, and there was bookies there as well, which is great.
And the winner, Quick Susie, she's obviously very exciting, beating Twilight Gleaming, who was very highly thought of Wesley Ward going into it. She won it very impressively. What does her immediate future hold? Have you got anything specifically in mind? I know she's entered at the Curra in 10 days' time.
She's probably unlikely to go there. To be honest, I'm waiting to hear back from her owners in America as to what her plans are. Going into Ascot, her plan was to go to America after Ascot. So, look, obviously, I'd love to hold on to the filly for longer if we could, and hopefully at the end of the season end up at the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, regardless of what happens, it's been an amazing journey, and I'm very grateful. So, sure, we'll wait and see what happens.
And moving forward, is this something that you're likely to be doing more of, trying to produce these two-year-olds for America, Gavin?
Yeah, well, look at it. It's certainly won't be ruled out. I don't know is the answer to that, really. I'd love to have a few more of them anyway. I'm sure we'll see what the yearling sales bring in the autumn.
From 2015 onwards, there's a real push for more runners on the flat. I think you went from 27 runners in 2014 to 53, and then massive amount, 270 in 2019. Was that conscious? Have you always been interested in doing that?
Yeah, last year was a bit of a strange one. We ran an awful lot of horses, and I think a lot of them we probably shouldn't have run. They just weren't good enough. I made a decision this year to try not to do that, and try and concentrate a little bit more on quality. So, that's the way I'd like to go forward. And if we could it all.
And is it just about making the operation year round? I mean, we've seen Gordon having a go with 2-year-olds and having success. Noel Mead had a Group One winner on the flat recently. Is it just from a commercial sense of running your own business, that having an operation that is 12 months of the year just makes it that much more viable?
It's an important part of it. It's also selling these 2-year-olds is big business as well. And if you can manage to come across a good one, it is good business.
And just moving away, like, to the adaptability is fantastic. So with Quick Susie, say, just so the listeners can get some insight, how would her regime differ from, say, a flooring porter day in, day out?
I suppose the fact that she's a 2-year-old filly and a sprinter at that, her workload would be very, very minimal, really. She worked last Thursday on the Old Vic up to Curra, and basically since then she's done very, very, very little. I suppose it differs a lot. It's more about having them really well and freshen themselves, rather than fitness. But it certainly worked yesterday anyway.
I don't want to navigate too far away from Royal Ascot, but I must talk about the Cheltenham Festival winners, Florin Porter and Vanillier, two extremely exciting horses. How much satisfaction did that give you?
Yeah, it's massive, really. Florin Porter, I bought him as an unraced 3-year-old for very small money. And he went from, from being a low-grade handicapper right the way through the ranks. It's great satisfaction in it.
And there's a few exciting horses as well coming through the yard. Let's be clear about it. My mate Mozzie, who looked very exciting, and sorry for butchering this pronunciation. Is it Percival Legoulois?
You probably have made as good a stab at it as I did. he's an exciting horse as well. We've some nice horses for next season.
And just your background as a farrier, that's right, isn't it, Gavin?
It is, yeah.
And so was training always in the back of your mind? I mean, it's something that, it started with you still, I presume, working as a farrier and training a few and built up and up. But was training always the ultimate goal?
No, not at all. I started training. I'd age stables and training as a hobby and rode a couple of pointers myself. And took out a restricted license to run a couple on the track. And just over time, it evolved, really. It's only the last 3 or 4 years that it's become, it's only the last 2 years that it's really become a full-time job as such. So, yeah, it evolved rather than planned.
It's wonderful seeing you do so well, and very well done from yesterday. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to speak to us, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks a million.
Such a cool customer. I get the impression, not really fazed by the big occasion, but I can imagine yesterday meant so much to him. It's incredible, isn't it, when you look at what he's done in recent years. He had Espoir d'Alain, who unfortunately passed away, but won a champion hurdle before, and looked a really exciting young horse, one that you'd imagine if he's still around now would have been dominating the 2-mile hurdling division, or would have been fascinating clash with Honeysuckle. I'm really fascinated by the different techniques training those National Hunt horses in comparison to the quick sprinters. He obviously had the likes of Florin Porter, Vanillier, who are 3-mile hurdlers and probably 3-mile chasers for time. There must be quite a few differences in how you train the horses. He alluded to it then. I suppose the sprinters do a lot less. Have you broken in a few flat horses?
We have, yeah. I mean, the best of them would probably be Berenger of Alan Kings, who was narrowly beaten by a certain Lord North in the Cambridgeshire a couple of years ago. And I'd be straight up, I'd love to break more flat horses in. It's something I get a real kick out of. From our point of view, where we are located, we're probably a bit far away from any major flat racing trainers. The nearest would probably be Ian Williams up near Birmingham. But again, he'd be more operating on dual purpose horses rather than training 2 year olds as such. So it's something I'd love to do more of, and it's something I find really exciting. I mean, from a point of view of the training methods, I mean, what you're dealing with is a jump horse is a stamina related athlete. It's aerobic exercise, and so you're trying to teach them to relax and breathe and train stamina into them. I thought Gavin made a really interesting comment about the freshness that's required with a flat horse, especially a two-year-old filly, that you're looking for a horse with an explosive burst of speed rather than having speed endurance, which you need to put into a jumper as such. You're looking for that sort of anaerobic burst of energy over five furlongs. So what he was saying about the fact that, yes, you're doing a little bit of work. She's had an away day to gallop on the Old Vic at the Curragh. But then since then, she's done very little. And even more so because she's a two-year-old, you've got to be very careful that you don't overtrain them, because they're so young and they don't need, they have a natural level of energy and fitness like a child. They don't need grafting hard to keep that sort of fitness edge on them. And there's no doubt with the flat horses, like you'll see them at the races, especially the sprinters, they're real big, burly, powerful animals. Like they're explosive and muscular, and looking for that, like I say, that burst of speed that isn't going to last much beyond half a mile, really. And whereas you couldn't do that with a jumper. A jumper, you have to put more mileage into them, harder graft, the necessity to be sort of fresh and full of it is less so, because they are a distance athlete, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But when you get, have you ever had many instances where you buy a horse that you think will be good for jumping, but they show that extra bit of speed? Do you then think they're going to be a really good jumper, or do you think that their stamina might not be there?
It's a good question. I mean, I suppose when you're looking as a national hunt trainer, and I suppose in recent years it's steered away from it with the horse in training, because our sort of milers on the flat and mile and a quarter horses have so much export value, the good ones, that we're not seeing so many very like high level flat horses go jumping anymore, because a lot of them are the Australian market and the Far East are paying so much money for them to go out there. I'm sure if you got one back that maybe had been a miler or you know, a 7 furlong mile horse, there would be a doubt in your mind as to whether they're going to stay. And if they were showing speed and maybe a little keenness in their work, it would make you slightly more anxious. But that you can also train a horse to stay further, you know, as in a great example would be Frankel. Yeah. You know, Henry Cecil, we saw that explosive performance in the Guineas, where Tom Queeley just dropped the reins and let him roll. And you saw, in my mind, in my lifetime, the most superlative, unbelievable performance I've ever seen, because horses just shouldn't be able to do that in a classic. But Henry Cecil then knew, for the good of the horse's career moving forward, he couldn't just allow him to blast off in front every time. So they spent the rest of the season teaching him to settle in behind, because he knew in the back of his mind that the season after, he wanted to go up to a mile and a quarter and win the Judmont International and the Champion Stakes and things, races like that. And he wasn't going to be able to do that just tearing off in front. So you saw the horse and his mindset and his stamina progress through being probably trained and nurtured to follow and do more distance work, I would imagine. So it's not always a guarantee that because they're a short run on the flat that you can't train to stay further.
Yeah.
And just, again, it's no guarantee that when one seemingly stays well on the flat that they will stay jumping. They're very different sports.
So for those that are listening that don't know, we bought a proconsul who's the full brother to Frankel, a son of him. How would you know when you're at the sales that he would stay?
Well, I suppose where you're looking at it, Frankel is surprising as a sire because he's getting a lot of horses that do stay well. You know, I mean, he's had a ledger winner in Logician already. So it doesn't seem that there's an issue for all of Frankel's natural exuberance. He was a Galileo and they do seem to stay well. So I would have thought Frankel's never going to end up as a jump stallion because of his incredible race record and the mares he's got and the success he's had on the flat. I mean, he looks at the moment like he is Galileo's...
A Derby winner now,
and he looks to all the world like he's Galileo's natural successor, doesn't he? But it wouldn't surprise me if opportunities allowed it that Frankel could very easily breed plenty of jumping winners because they do seem to stay well. They seem to handle cutting the ground fine. The horse that we bought, I would have no concerns with him staying 2.5 miles in a point-to-point at this stage. He seems... And then you get them home and you see their mentality and you've been around him, our yard. He's a pretty laid-back guy. Mm-hmm. He actually had his first jump over a fence a couple of days ago and he's very amenable. He takes everything in. He doesn't seem to get flustered by anything that's going on around him. And so those little boxes that you tick also are going to make it easier for him to stay, because if he was a slightly anxious person and he found everything stressful and it revved him up and caused him to lose his timing, you'd be more concerned. And then that's another great thing, timing. If a horse has natural timing, irrespective of what trip they run over, it's far easier to get them to stretch out because they're always giving themselves a chance to stay further because they're breathing well, they're in good rhythm all the time. If they're reckless or, you know, they're over racing, so wanting to go faster all the time than the rider wants them to go, it becomes that much harder to make them stay further, which again is probably shows the genius of Henry Cecil, because Frankel was very much one of those. He probably had a pedigree to stay even further than a mile and a quarter, but his mentality was always against him because he really wanted to get on with the job. So what you're seeing is like pedigree is a pointer to what is going to happen in the future. It's certainly not a hard and fast rule, you know, as in it's why we end up with seemingly sprint sires that get horses that stay a lot further than their sire ever did, and possibly even the other way, sires that seemingly stayed a lot further, getting horses a lot quicker than they were. And then you have to factor in the mother, the mare, that's a huge influence on what goes on. And yes, as you quite rightly say, the horse's individual personality and character will have a major say on what happens moving forward. And again, they are like us, shaped by their experiences. So if they have a nice experience starting off and they learn to do things the right way and they don't have a fright or something go wrong, it's amazing how they will carry that on into their later life, and it will help shape them as individuals just like people.
What I find very interesting is throughout the day, if you've never been to a sales, you would get up nice and early, you'd have a look through as many horses as you possibly can. What you're looking for is...
For us, it's sort of a natural athleticism.
Yeah.
Again, you are taking note of their character. These are young horses that have been pitched into a very different environment to what many of them have ever experienced before. Yeah. And there's no doubt you are seeing how they cope with all that. Are they getting edgy? Are they being difficult to handle? Are they showing character chinks that might have a factor moving forward for what we're looking to do, to produce them to win a point-to-point early in life? And then we're sort of taking a look at pedigree and whatever else and seeing what happens beyond there, as you found that when you were saying to me, what are you going to look to buy?
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. You obviously look through, let's say you look through 100 horses in the day and you like the look of 20. How do you put a price valuation on those 20? And because I know that you're very keen on putting a price on a horse, and if it goes past that in the sales, it's a no-go. It's pointless going further just because you might have the budget, but the horse might not necessarily be worth that. How do you work that out?
It's a really good question. I suppose it depends on how much we like them, how strong their pedigree is. You chat to the vendors and get a vibe of where they see them financially, because they're, a lot of these people are very experienced at what they do, and by nature they are also doing what we do. They're pricing them all up with the reserve price, which is the minimum they can be bought for. So you're seeing where their natural feeling about the horse is physically and with its pedigree. We then look at it from a sort of athlete point of view about how we like them. And again, what you have to remember is the criteria is very much personal to Francesca and I, in what we like isn't always what so-and-so will like, you know? Yeah. So no different to everyday life. We all like different things. We all put a greater value on certain things than others. So we will have our own tick box of what is important to us in the horse and individual. We'll talk to the vendor, see what they think about them and see where they value them. And from all putting all these factors together, like you say, we will say, well, okay, this horse is worth X amount to us. And 9 times out of 10, we're very much stringent that once it's beyond that, no matter how much we like it, like the horse, we will walk away from it. Because at the end of the day, this side of what we do is a business. And it's very easy when you're there at the sales to puff your chest out and think, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to keep bidding because I really want this horse. And you get competitive about it. You see the other person on the other side of the ring and I want to have it more than you. And it you can very quickly go broke chasing your emotions. So you do have to put a figure on it. And when it comes to that, try and step back from it.
I suppose you're in a slightly different position to, say, someone that wants to buy the horse to own the horse.
Of course.
During his racing career, they might be more likely to pay a pretty penny more because they're obviously going to, they've got it for different reasons. You want to pre-train, win a point with, and ultimately sell on.
So what we're doing is pin-hooking is what the term is within the racing industry. So we're looking to, like a trader, we're hoping to buy low and sell high.
Yeah.
So you have to be working your margin in. There's no point in us turning up at the sales and going,
the wolf of Station Yard.
Well, quite. but there's no point turning up at the sales and going, oh, we love this horse and we're going to buy it for any money. And it goes and makes 50 or 60,000. And knowing really the ceiling we can get is sort of 100 grand, because the risk reward is very tricky. Because if the horse gets beat a couple of times and we're only going to get 5 or 10,000 for it, the drop off is enormous. And the actual upside, yes, sounds like significant profit, but when you weigh up the risk, it probably isn't worth taking that risk at that time. And as you say, when you're buying the horse because you love it and you want to race it and hope it's going to be a champion for you as an owner, you can maybe afford to go on a little bit further because you're helping fuel your individual dream, whereas we have to be a bit more hard-minded about it and always be factoring our profit and loss margin.
Anyone that's interested in the bloodstock world, and maybe you want to buy and you've got slight reservations about it, just going to one of these sales is eye-opening and you learn a heck of a lot. There's going to be thousands of people now at Goss just there for a jolly.
Goss will love it.
They're not going to love that so much. It is a fascinating world and something that I look to further my interest in and get into it more. Thank you very much, Charlie. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Obviously, Gavin was a brilliant guest and hopefully he can have a successful season. And I'm sure he's going to be in the winner's enclosure at a Cheltenham Festival and even a Royal Ascot probably soon enough.
Without doubt.